What if I told you that there are physicians out there earning $400,000 a year living paycheck to paycheck? And that it comes from a psychological phenomenon we are all susceptible to. Keep listening as we dive in. Welcome to the Money Meets Medicine podcast, where we talk all about the personal finance topics you wish you had learned in medical school. I'm your host, Justin Harvey, and here is your co-host, who's very proud of himself because he just hung some outdoor lights all by his big boy self, Dr. Jimmy Turner.
You know, I'm not known for being a handyman. Like, that's just not something that Jimmy Turner is known for. And I was very proud of myself because I've got this deck area, and my son, who is 12, is getting into pitching with baseball. And so we've got like this little portable mound that we put out there, and I go and put on the catcher's mask so I don't catch one in the grill. And he pitches to me, and it's just one of those situations where he's starting to throw hard enough, and when the sun's out just right and this under this deck area that has some shade, like the ball is just very hard to see. And I almost caught a couple in the chest the other day. And so I bought these outdoor lights for sporting events and installed them where like these other fixtures were underneath this deck. And when I turned on the light switch, turned the breaker back on, first of all, and then turned the light switch on, it actually worked. I was super proud of myself. Like, first time, like, I was sure I was going to do something wrong.
I'm just thinking about that terrifying moment of insecurity, that split second when the ball goes from the light into the dark and you were holding your glove where you thought the ball was going to go, but then you realize there's that split second, like you haven't caught it yet and you can't see it. And you're not sure, is it going to hit my glove or is it going to hit my nose?
Yep. Yep. And it's just going to get worse. I mean, he's throwing like 55 right now, so he's not throwing the fastest fastball in the world for his age, but it's getting quicker. And I'm like, I think a 55 mile an hour ball to the clavicle would probably still hurt at this point in my life. So I'm not trying to do that. But yeah, so that's one of Jimmy Turner's recent successes that has nothing to do with personal finance. But yeah, so we're going to talk about something that I love talking about. We've shared it on the show before, but I just think this is a topic that cannot be talked about enough. Because longtime listeners know that I love keeping it real. But the average physician, give or take, you know, non-specialist specialist, going to earn somewhere between 250 and 400, typically 300 to 400. And yeah, there's a decent amount of doctors that I run across who legitimately live paycheck to paycheck, don't have a significant emergency fund. They don't have a lot of money saved. It's really actually not that uncommon. And there's even studies that show that something like 30% of doctors that are over the age of 60 don't have $1 million in net worth to their name. And that includes your home, which is insane given what homes have done in the last 20 years, right? Like, your home by itself, if you've been around till you're 60, probably should be worth $1 million if you haven't done everything wrong. And so it's something that actually happens. But the phenomenon that causes it, there are several that lead to this. We'll talk about a lot of psychology of money lessons today, which are really cool to talk about, is also something that hits you when you get an inheritance or you win a lottery or you get a big bump in pay. And so this is something that isn't just unique to physicians at one stage of your career. There are moments where these psychological phenomena that happen are going to have a chance to wreck your financial life in multiple ways, multiple times over. So super excited to talk about that. Before we dive in, though, it is June when this episode is coming out. So please make sure that you have not left residency. If you happen to be a resident listening to this episode without getting disability insurance. And I actually got this question on Instagram today where I was like, well, hey, Jimmy, isn't it okay to like wait till fellowship to get disability insurance? And I had to tell the person, like, it's totally fine, right? So long as your options are the same. And I don't think that residents realize that the options they have for disability insurance are actually in some way associated with the program that you attend. Like, different companies offer different products to different residents at different institutions. Said differently, your institution doesn't offer any of them, but Guardian may offer a program to you where you are right now and not in fellowship, right? And maybe Principal offers you one right now in fellowship where you're going to be, but not where you're currently in residency. So getting quotes when you're a resident in June gives you the option to know, okay, I should wait until fellowship because I've got a better choice, or I need to knock this out because the choice I'm going to have in fellowship is actually not as good for me and my specialty. So really, there is no excuse to leave residency without getting quotes on disability insurance. If you want us to help you do that at Money Meets Medicine Disability Insurance, go to moneymeetsmedicine.com/disability, and we will be more than happy to show you all of your options and provide you a company that you can actually trust. So Justin, we're going to talk about people living paycheck to paycheck and sometimes even going broke, which is scary. I'm just curious from the financial advisor's perspective before we dive in. Like, how often do you find it when people come to you that they're making a significant amount of money and maybe it's not exactly paycheck to paycheck, but there's just not a lot of room because of choices that they've made.
There's a meaningful selection bias that happens, I would surmise, with someone in my position. It's hard to really say, but I can tell you, I see it a lot. And not only with people who are interested in becoming clients occasionally, but also just secondhand from being, I'm frequently at that dinner with nine doctors and me at the table, just because that's who all of my wife's friends are. A lot of those folks make good financial decisions, not like highly developed, quantitatively optimized, but like they just have the basic, like, I know what it is to live beneath my means, and I do that so that I don't have baseline stress. So I see that typically in my social group, but in the broader category of physicians, I see it a lot more than the average person would guess. And it often does manifest itself in stress once the topic comes up. And to take it one step further, I've been in a number of conversations where I'm looking at people making life decisions. And if I'm being honest, like, I've seen people talking about clinical decisions that are not fully bifurcated from the question of compensation and income. And so the ripple effects of not being able to build wealth in a reliable way, it impacts every part of your life negatively. But even the way you do your job, it's frightening when you think about it. And that's one of the reasons I'm, like you, Jimmy, very passionate about this topic and love helping doctors get out in front of it a little more.
Yeah. So I think the best way to introduce this topic is to share the story that I love sharing about one of the two. We're probably talking about more than one or two psychological principles that impact the way that you just relate and interact with money. But my favorite story is the one about Denis Diderot in the 1700s, French philosopher. And as a prior philosophy major, I can interpret that for you. That means that he was broke. And so he wrote books and did philosophy, didn't have a lot of money. And then Catherine the Great, Russian Empress, comes in. She loves his work. She buys them all. He becomes instantaneously wealthy. He calls it the sudden accumulation of wealth in one of his essays. And so the first thing he buys is this scarlet robe. And as he's sitting there with this fancy scarlet robe, Diderot's like, well, you know what? That desk, I probably need to upgrade that thing. And now that I've got a new nice desk, it probably needs a new chair and a Persian rug to go underneath it. And oh, you know what? I also need to continue to upgrade my lifestyle in all these other ways. And so he warns of the sudden accumulation of wealth and the propensity for people in that situation to basically spend themselves back down to broke. And no other example is as good as that, as the doctor who's finishing June listening to this episode, who's going to get their first paycheck as an attending in July and watch it go up by 5 or 10 times that amount in a single month, right? And now all of a sudden you're like, you know what? With this newfound money, I need a new car. And that car needs a 3-car garage house. And that house, it needs doctor furniture in it. Oh, and don't forget, it's in a country club membership. But, you know, there's a golf club community in this neighborhood that I'm in now. And so all of a sudden, you have this massive paycheck difference and you spent every single dime and you did it before you ever considered saving and how much you need to save to get to financial independence by the age that you want. And so you've done it backwards, where you've inflated your lifestyle. And this is really important because when you finally settle down and realize, hey, I'm not saving enough money, I'm probably not going to be able to retire at 60 or 65 if I wanted to. There's only two levers you have, my friend, which are to either spend less money, which means downgrading your lifestyle, which is extremely painful in my experience for people. As soon as they realize this, they get depressed. Or somehow making a lot more money. So some people try to out-earn their spending habits and try to make the delta from a earnings standpoint. You can do that. It's hard. But most people have a really hard time once they've upgraded that lifestyle. And so like Diderot, in June of this year, if you are finishing training, I would encourage you to beware of the sudden accumulation of wealth.
Yes. I'm thinking about leverage, debt. Leverage is the fancy way that MBA and finance people are talking about debt. And it's basically borrowing money from somebody else to pay for something that you want today. And the more leverage you have, often leverage is used in the context of building financial products. And if we're talking about, oh, that uses leverage, or that's 2 or 3x levered, or 1.5x levered, it's another way of saying it's risky because it performs just way more or way less because of this leverage effect. And when we apply it to personal finance, and particularly freshly minted physicians who are just wrapping up training and progressing into attendinghood, the more leverage you have, the more embedded risk you have in your situation, and the more you're hanging your hat on your ability to have nothing change, And as you all know, like, life sometimes gives you that, but often doesn't. And so when you're thinking about lifestyle decisions, where am I going to live? What am I going to drive? And especially those decisions that, like, the ripple effect will continue for years and decades. The effect of leverage on those decisions is meaningful. And it's always good to just be fully informed and look risk in the face. I never tell people what to do. At least I try not to. But I do want them to look the thing in the face and say, I see you and I acknowledge you and I don't care. It doesn't bother me. This is in alignment with my values, whatever the override is. But when it comes to using leverage, meaning like I'm putting zero money down on this house or 5% down to get the forever home and financing a car, and I'm like running really lean on my cash just so I can have a lifestyle that all my friends have. In many cases, like, the medical community does have this comparison. The leverage piece is what's going to blow you up. Yeah.
Yeah. But I think it's so dangerous. And the reason why I would probably be a little more patriarchal in your situation. And I run into this all the time on Instagram, right? If you're not following Money Meets Medicine on Instagram, you should come follow 60,000 people. I've actually really enjoyed that. That's where I interact directly with people. You send me a DM on Instagram, I'm very likely to respond. I try to respond to everything. Before we get back to it, let's talk taxes. As many of you know, I recently took a 1099 private practice gig as an anesthesiologist after being a W-2 doc for 15 years. And honestly, after combining this with the business income from Money Meets Medicine, the tax piece almost broke me. Should I be an S-Corp? What about QBI deductions or the pass-through entity tax breaks I should be taking advantage of? Nobody really teaches this stuff in residency. You just kind of figure it out after you've already screwed it up. That's why I started working with Gelt for proactive tax planning for my own taxes. Gelt is a modern CPA firm that specializes in helping high-earning physicians. So whether you're a locums doc, a practice owner, a partner getting a K-1, or a W-2 physician with 1099 income on the side, Gelt handles the stuff that actually moves the needle. S-Corp elections, PTET credits, QBI, retirement optimization, really everything in between. The biggest reason I started working with Gelt myself is that unlike most CPA firms, they provide a proactive strategy all year long, not just an intake form and running the numbers in February or March each year. So if your CPA only reached out in February or March and left you wondering if you paid more on taxes than you should, it doesn't have to be that way. A great CPA is a year-round partner who knows your business and reaches out proactively. And Q2 is the best time to make a switch because Gelt specializes in exactly this kind of transition for those of you who are ready for a better experience. Speaking of which, when new clients get started this quarter, Gelt goes back through your last 3 years of returns and identifies deductions that were missed, and in some cases is able to recover them. This is included as a complimentary service for new clients. So if your tax situation has outgrown TurboTax or your current CPA only calls you in March each year, head over to moneymeetsmedicine.com/CPA for a free consult with Gelt. And because you're a part of the Money Meets Medicine community, when you use that link, you'll also get a 10% discount off services with Gelt that first year as well. So head on over to moneymeetsmedicine.com/CPA and check out Gelt. That said, I get tons and tons of comments on reels, comments in my DMs about people where I have these reels where I'm comparing the rich doctor and the poor doctor, which is just an inflammatory, controversial reel. And so it just, like, one of them has 3 million views at this point. And people were like, well, I want to be the poor doctor, you know, where I'm giving all these examples of the thing that they spend money on and they have no net worth, basically, versus the rich doctor who has a little more subtle of a lifestyle and is actually saving money. And they're like, well, you know, the poor doctor is living it up and living life and loving it. And I think it's so dangerous because people are so short-sighted. Human beings by nature think about, well, that doesn't bother me right now. Okay, great. I can tell you as a slightly elder statesman 10 years down the road, that person 10 years from now who is going to want the option to practice medicine as much or as little as you want is going to care very deeply about the burnout and the depression that they have from practicing medicine, if that's your situation. That's not everybody. Some people love their job. But there's a significant contingent of doctors who are not happy in medicine and they wanted to live it up because they thought they wouldn't care. And then 10 years later, they have no options to cut back in medicine or to change jobs or to do something different because of the financial choices that they made. And so for me, like, it kind of goes into that same territory where it's like staring it directly in the face to me would mean, what are your thoughts about this right now? You probably do this, Justin, because you're a great advisor, but let's journey forward 10 years and let's just imagine a world where you're burned out in medicine and you don't necessarily love your job and you realize that maybe part of that solution is cutting back a day or two a week. Would you be able to, A, afford that based on the financial decisions we're making right now? B, would it bother you if you're in that situation and you didn't have the choice because of the financial decisions we're making right now? Like, can the person right now and the person 10 years from now who wants that option, Are they both going to be happy? Or is it just the person right now who's short-sighted and thinks that they want to live it up because they worked really hard and I earned this and I'm a doctor and I spent all those long hours and sleepless nights getting through residency and fellowship in medical school. And so I deserve to spend my money. And I'm like, you know what you deserve? To have the option in 10 years. That's what you deserve. And people don't really think about that.
Yes. And I think part of the sober assessment is, let's make a list of the things that I want today, the things that are important to me. And then let's fast forward. Now you're married with 2.5 kids and a white picket. And perhaps the cadence of your existence is a little different, and the prioritization, not the values really, but the expression of the values through your priorities does change. And precisely what you're saying, Jimmy, you can lead a horse to water, I guess. And I'm big on behavioral modification and like accountability. And frankly, the people that wouldn't at least acknowledge the fact that, oh yeah, you know what, when I'm 44, I might think differently about how my life should look and the kind of margin I want to create and the value I have on my time and what family means to me. If you're not married, you know, the other experiences that you're looking to cultivate, like you need to have the momentum in your life to create the bandwidth over that decade to be able to do those things. And it might be a little different a decade from now than it is today. Frankly, yeah, doctors are good at long-term strategic thinking. If you put it all out there, I find that most people are reasonable and they're going to synthesize a response that's going to be a little more in their own self-interest.
I think with help, people can do that. I think on their own, their human nature is to just think about the here and now and what's going to make them happy right now. And I think that that's a big trap for people. I think another thing I run into when I have these reels that pop up, and I try to put some context in the captions of them that some people read, is that there's a false dichotomy here, right? People like see my content, and the podcast listeners that have been listening to me for whatever it's been, 6 years, 7 years now, they know better. One of the things that separates you and I from a lot of people in the personal finance space for doctors is that we have this view on moderation. I finance a car. I definitely don't need to finance a car, right? Like that is a choice that I make so that I can have options in terms of cash flow for investments that I think are going to do better than my finance car. That is a controversial take in here. And so like, I'm not the guy who's going to tell you that financing a car is the worst, terrible, possible, imaginable decision you could possibly. We're not that people. Like we say, hey, like you got to know your values. You got to decide what's important to you. You got to decide where you're going, how you're going to get there. But I think it's a false dichotomy. And I think it's where people are like, you can either live like a pauper or you can just YOLO, just spend every dollar, buy the Lamborghini, get the house, you know, all of the things. And it really isn't that way. And looking back at my life, when I finished training in my early 30s to now, like Kristen and I have felt like we've lived like kings and queens the entire time. And so those first 2 or 3 years, the way that we made that successful was by following the 10% rule that I teach in my book, right? So like you get a $10,000 raise when you become an attending, take $1,000 every month and you can spend it on whatever you want. Like it really doesn't matter. No strings attached. It could be the worst financial decision ever. $1,000 a month, do whatever you want. And then take the other $9,000 and pay off loans, make some advancements in terms of your financial independence and putting money into investments to allow you to accomplish that goal. And by doing that, we basically had like 140% raise from the money we were making as a resident, felt like we were living great. And we were also hammering away at our student loans and we saved so much money that, you know, we could do financial independent work optional, which we'll talk about in the next, you know, couple episodes after this one. So subscribe to make sure you listen to those as well. But I think it's a really important topic. The false dichotomy here, though, the other trap people fall into is it's not an either or. You don't have to live like a pauper or enjoy life. Believe it or not, you can spend some money intentionally, enjoy it, while you're also saving enough that the person you're going to be in 10 years enjoys it too. Like, I feel like that's the trap that people get stuck in a lot of times.
Yeah. Ramit Sethi talks about taking the one category of thing that you really like and spend 100 times. He says a lot of things that kind of annoy me, but that's one that really makes so much sense. And it precisely speaks to this issue of like, it's not binary on your entire existence. It's where you don't care, you know, spend what you need to. And the things that really light you up, you can go wild in that one category. And typically, you can still make it work if you're making the kind of money that we're talking about. And that is really like a high ROI way to experience your resources.
Yeah. One other topic I wanted to talk about in terms of behavioral finance, psychology of money sort of things when you're finishing training, and this impacts all doctors. This isn't just when you finish training. But when you finish training, this is when it's particularly noticeable. You just got done with training. You're super tired. Become an attending. You're making money, but you're really busy. And I think it surprises residents. And I'm not trying to depress our resident listeners because we have many, but believe it or not, your life gets busier after residency. It's not less busy. It's just busy in a different way. And so you end up getting busy. And fortunately, you're listening to this podcast. That means this is probably not you. But for a lot of doctors, they just don't have the time to learn about investing. They don't have the time to meet with a financial advisor or find one. They don't have the time to upgrade the disability insurance because they need more coverage now that they're becoming attending. And they forgot to answer the email that if you forget to answer, like your increase option goes away, by the way. Like, don't ignore emails that talk about increasing your disability coverage when you finish training. As an aside, because every year I get an email like, dude, I didn't realize it was a one or done. Like, I had to answer the question and I missed the email and now I can't increase my coverage. It's a total nightmare.
That's a good aside. I want to just reinforce that. If you see something about the increase option, answer that email because it's free. It's built in. You've already paid for it. And it's important, especially if you're only at that 5,000 to 7,500 level of sort of introductory coverage. And then you want to ratchet it up in attending hood. You need it. Answer that email.
But the reason that people miss that email is the same reason that they don't learn about investing or find a financial advisor. It's like the head in the sand analysis paralysis. Like, there's too many options and not enough time kind of mantra. And so they just do nothing. They're getting the match because they're required to at their employer. And they didn't even do enough to like opt out of that if they wanted to. Like, you know, it's just automatic. And so it happened. And this is my experience, Justin, as a non-advisor. So correct me if you have a different experience. But once people have a plan, all that stress you have about all of those things tends to go away because you now have a plan. There's a course, you follow it and you just get things done. And once the plan is in place, you're really just maintaining it and it takes so much less time. So it's like one of those things, just get it done. Don't stick your head in the sand. You know, don't be an ostrich. Just learn a little bit. It's not that bad. If you can learn medicine, you can definitely learn money.
Yeah, it's a combination of the plan and then also I think just like identifying the important variables. And there's a lot of fear that comes from just, I'm disorganized. I don't really know what the important things are. And as a result, there's just a high baseline level of stress. And I think when we identify, oh, these two or three things are important, there's a priority here. There's this six other things we're going to handle in the next 6 months that we can put those lower down the list. The organization, even if your situation is frankly like bad, and Jimmy, I'm sure you've probably seen this in the medical world, like, if I have 12 potential diagnoses, it's really stressful. If I have one, even if it's like the worst one on the list, at least, well, there's a concrete pathway and it might be a hard path, but at least it's certain.
Probably the more common thing that I've seen there is actually watching a person go from having an uncertain diagnosis to a not great diagnosis. And to some level, they're actually comforted because they're like, at least I now have an answer. Mm-hmm. Like that uncertainty is gone. Now, they may not love the diagnosis, but that uncertainty really does plague people. It's hard for us to handle. And so having a plan, and this is what I tell people all the time, like, you know, it's not about getting to financial independence. Like, even people that have a plan and they know they're investing enough to get to financial independence, those people feel like they have options, even if you're not there yet. It's the people that don't have a plan and they're not saving enough and they never thought about how much they needed to save, but they did buy the house and they did buy the car and they did buy the private school education for their kids. And now they'd have to downgrade their lifestyle in order to save the amount they need to be financially independent by the age they want. Those are the people, my friend, that are stressed. There's a balance, but this is an important topic in June as this episode's coming out because naturally people are finishing training, but maybe you finished training already. I still think this is an important topic, whether that's when you get an inheritance or a lump sum of money or you have some other sort of financial situation come up. Just be thoughtful about what your financial goals are first. So in other words, save before you spend. But by all means, once you're accomplishing your financial goals, you should spend absolutely guilt-free. And that is another beauty of doing it that way. So as we wind down, don't forget, please, please do not leave residency without getting a quote for disability insurance. Go to moneymeetsmedicine.com/disability. My best friend and partner in crime at Money Meets Medicine will take care of you, Michael Kittner. And we would be more than honored to help you and love helping all the residents and doctors that we've helped. We've helped hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of this year. So it's been a true pleasure helping doctors get their disability insurance. And if you're looking for somebody to trust, moneymeetsmedicine.com/disability. All right, everybody. We will see you next week. Cheers.
Justin Harvey is a certified financial planner at APM Wealth, where he helps anesthesiologists and pain medicine physicians. Dr. Jimmy Turner is a practicing academic anesthesiologist at Wake Forest in North Carolina. He's also a licensed insurance agent. However, either Justin or Jimmy are your financial planner, investment advisor, or insurance agent. This show is expressly for general education and entertainment purposes only. Nothing should be considered financial advice. All views expressed are solely the views of the guests on the show and do not represent the views or opinions of their employer.